Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Tonight, I'm talking about one of my favorite subjects, estate planning, but we're going to target particularly talking about asset titling and beneficiary designations. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Judy Ann is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear us without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I do typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic. I'll do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. And I know it's a lovely, lovely evening, but this is probably going to be one of my favorite shows. I really think that this is an area that many people ignore or turn away from, or it's too complicated, and so they just don't want to deal with it. And I think it's one of the most critical areas of our financial life that's the easiest enough to take care of. So I want people to stop thinking about it being overwhelming and complicated and realize it could be some of the easiest planning that you can do for yourself and your loved ones, and provide just, you know, lots and lots of security and, assurances for them after you have passed on. But it's also critical. So I want to say it's one of the easiest. I'm not saying it's not a little bit complicated. It's one of the easiest things to do when you understand all the pieces that are involved and make sure that you use the professionals and attorneys to have the proper documents and work with your financial advisors to make sure that you coordinate with your attorney and your will as far as asset titling and beneficiary designation. And this is where I think many people get in trouble. They aren't either coordinating it, or they're reading things online or listening to people, you know, on the radio and really not paying attention to the implications of what they're doing. So it's all about conversations, understanding, making sure that you're aligning your estate plans in the proper way and doing things that you don't get yourself in trouble. So sometimes you might think you're going to accomplish some, you know, objective and go about implementing certain, asset titling, changing beneficiaries to achieve that, and you find out that it really wasn't the right way. So we're going to talk about that tonight, and I hope that this is going to be interesting and applicable to a lot of people. It is applicable to just about everybody, but I hope it's also interesting enough to take you away from this gorgeous sunny evening. If not, and you're just catching us on the way home, you don't have time to finish listening to the show tonight, remember that you can always listen to podcasts of prior shows at wdiy.org or through the Your Financial Choices website at yourfinancialchoices.com. So pick up those podcasts if you can't listen to the show live. If you do have questions tonight about our topic, estate planning, the phone number is 610-758-8810. So what are we going to talk about tonight? I want to give you a little outline of what estate planning is, what documents are covered, what's the difference between probate versus non-probate, what kind of non-probate assets are we talking about, and what are the implications of accomplishing your objectives through asset titling or through beneficiary designations. What are the implications and what are some of the red flags or roadblocks or, you know, cautions that you have to watch out for? As much as we can cover in an hour, and remember that this is just general information, that anything specific to your situation, you really need to sit down with professionals and write this all out, and so that you can kind of have a picture of what your situation is. Your situation is always different than your neighbors or the next guy's. Okay, so in general, what is estate planning? Well, basically, it's making sure that you have enough assets for your life. I like people to remember about that piece, because estate planning isn't just about what you leave to your heirs. It's about making sure that you have enough money in your lifetime, which is part of your estate. Recall, you know, what was it? What was that show called? Dallas, where they lived on the estate. So they were all alive. Here they had the big estate. It's assets that you have during your lifetime. And then what you don't use during your lifetime is left to your heirs. That is also part of the estate planning. So you just want to make sure that you're taking care of yourself during your lifetime, and that after you're gone, whatever you have left is making sure that your assets get to the people and places, possibly, that you want them to get to. You could say that estate planning also includes taking care of those documents. And the documents that we are talking about are your will, your last, you know, typically it used to say your last testament and will, last will and testament. So now it might just say will. So your will, which gives directions of what happens if you pass away. And there's assets that are in your name alone, and we don't know who they go to. There's no asset titling. There's no beneficiary designations. I have a bank account with my name alone. It has $100,000 in it. Who does it go to? Well, if it's not indicated anywhere else, I'd have to look at the will to see who it goes to. So the will does more, though, than just saying who gets your assets. It also provides instructions for an executor who acts according to your directions that you put in that document as to how to pay out your assets, pay your bills, pay your debts, that type of thing. What kind of management provisions do they have? So the will is much more than just passing out the assets, but basically in my little summary tonight, that's what we're covering. The will is what is going to get your assets to the people that you've indicated. And again, those are assets that are just in your name alone. Other estate planning documents are the power of attorney. Of course, that is giving someone power during your lifetime to maybe do things with your assets. So that's a very important document. We did a show with Judy Harris back in, I believe, January on the power of attorney, because there's new rules in Pennsylvania, new laws in Pennsylvania. You can go back and listen on the podcast for that show. There's a living will. What happens to you when you are in the final stages of life, your health directives? How do you want someone to exercise your final wishes in your health? So those are our typical estate planning documents. It could also include a trust. It could include a separate living trust. It could include an irrevocable trust. It could include a trust under your will. So there's lots of estate planning documents that could apply when you're doing your estate planning. We are also going to talk about other ways of passing assets to your beneficiaries outside your will as well when we get back. If you have, from our next break, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. We're talking about estate planning tonight, in particular, asset titling and beneficiary designations. The phone number this evening is 610-758-8810. You can call and talk live on air with me or off air, whatever is more comfortable for you. If it's off air, just have your question ready for Judy Ann. She'll write it down and bring it into the studio and then wait and listen for the answer on air. So again, that phone number is 610-758-8810. So we're talking about estate planning. Basically, people quite often think about their documents, but I wanted to take it a little bit further than that. For folks who may think they could circumvent the document writing part of their estate planning because they have heard, oh, if I just make all of my accounts joint or with beneficiary designations, that makes it non-probate, and therefore I don't need a will. Well, you could do that, but let's talk about some of the implications of that. So first, let's talk about, first of all, I think everyone should have their documents because you never know what you're going to miss in possibly your asset titling or beneficiary designations, or if something happens to those beneficiaries that you've named or that person that you have that joint titling with. If you have not made further provisions, then and there's a multiple death, simultaneous death, then we might still have to look to the will to see who's getting some of these assets. So it's not always a catch-all just doing asset titling or beneficiary designation. So still, I strongly encourage you to see an attorney about preparing a will and all the other estate planning documents that we mentioned. So some people trying to circumvent the will. So as I said, assets without any other titling or beneficiary designation, the only way we know who it's going to would be looking at the will, so to speak. Or if you don't have a will, it's going to follow the intestate rules, which Pennsylvania has, you know, a list of how that would flow, whether there's a surviving spouse or children and or parents. If not any of those, then, you know, it branches out into other relatives, siblings, and nieces, nephews. It could go on and on, depending on how much in your family tree you have. So let's kind of pull back from that and not get into all those details. Let's talk for a moment about what's the difference between probate assets and non-probate assets. So the probate assets I mentioned basically is, you know, assets that are going to go through your will, be administered by your executor. Non-probate assets are those assets that are already directed as to who gets them. So that can happen through trusts, 529 accounts. Those are college savings accounts. Some of you may have set those up for children and grandchildren or nieces or nephews, asset titling, and beneficiary designations. So let's talk quickly about 529 accounts. And that is because those are a great tax planning strategy for estate planning and income tax planning. And I want to kind of just get that out of the way, actually, so because I want to talk more about asset titling and beneficiary designations. But 529s, as I mentioned, are college savings plans. Any family member could do that. I could set one up for my niece or my nephew. I could set it up even for a friend. You retain control of the account. You get, in Pennsylvania, a tax deduction for contributions to a college savings 529 account up to the amount of the gift, or it's capped at the annual gift exemption for federal, which is $14,000 this year, or your income. So there's a number of different caps. If I only put $5,000 in, I'm only going to get a deduction for $5,000. If my income is $5,000 or more, that's okay. If my income is only $2,000, I'm only going to get a deduction for $2,000. So if my income is $5,000, I get a deduction for $5,000. the gift exclusion's 14,000, it's under five, I get it. If I put $20,000 into a 529, I'm only going to get a deduction for $14,000 if I have that much income. So there's different caps. And that applies to both a husband and wife if you're filing a joint return. You have to make sure that each spouse has that much income to warrant the deduction. One spouse can't have all the income and the other not to get a duplicate deduction. So husband, $14,000, wife, $14,000. If the husband has the $28,000 of income and the wife doesn't have any, the deduction's only going to be $14,000. Both have to have the income to cover the gift from each of them. So the beautiful thing for 529 accounts, for those of us who are Pennsylvania residents, is that that contribution could be to a 529 plan that's situated anywhere in the country. And it could be, it doesn't have to be for our children. It could be our grandchildren or anyone else if we make that contribution. It doesn't even have to be a plan that we've established ourselves, but for our purposes tonight, when we're talking about estate planning, I'm assuming that we've established the plan ourselves. We retain ownership and control of it, even though it's considered a gift. It's a gift to that beneficiary that I've named on the account. Because it's considered a gift, it's not included in my estate. It's not included in my estate for Pennsylvania inheritance tax purposes. Now, there's certain other limitations at a federal level. The IRS lets us make that annual exclusion amount as well. But for gift tax purposes, there's other nuances to it. It's a little complicated for me to get into for my topic tonight that I want to cover. That could be another show, but just understand to work with professionals when you're going to do such a thing. So for the most part, it's multiple benefits. Income tax deduction for Pennsylvania follows the gift tax rules. It gets out of your estate. It's not included for Pennsylvanian purposes. It's income tax free on the earnings if used for qualified education expenses. So lots of advantages for 529 accounts. So when we talk about estate planning outside of a will, that is one of the techniques that you could use, or if you're a grandparent, particularly if you want a gift to your grandchildren, that is certainly a great option. And you could do it to, if the parents have the account, you could make the contribution into the parents' account. But quite often, there's certain advantages for grandparents setting up their own 529 account for grandchildren. And we've talked about that on other shows as well. So 529s is one way to get assets out of your estate. And that would be non-probate. It's not even included for Pennsylvania inheritance tax purposes. Another way that's non-probate would be to establish a trust. And there are any number of trusts that someone could set up, but the general terms that I'm going to talk about for purposes of someone still wanting, you know, the use of their assets would be a revocable trust or a living trust. It's the same thing, just different names for it. Revocable meaning I can revoke it. And a living trust while I'm alive. So you can set up a living trust for yourself to avoid probate, which again isn't a big thing in Pennsylvania, but then you are not individually owning those assets. The trust is owning those assets. And you set up who the beneficiaries are of that account or those multiple accounts, whatever you put in the name of the trust, the beneficiaries are detailed in that trust document. You can have that separate revocable or living trust. You could also set up trust under the will, but that does not make that a non-probate asset then, because a trust under the will only springs into being if you die and the assets go first through the estate into that trust if it's a testamentary trust. So we'll talk about that in a little bit more detail when we come back from this break. Phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. We're talking about estate planning tonight. I'm giving some general basic kind of concepts at the beginning of the show here, and then we're going to get into a little bit more of the detail around asset titling and beneficiary designations. But in general, estate planning includes, of course, getting all those documents ready. And then quite often you'll hear people talk about probate versus non-probate. So we've talked what that is basically. And I'm talking now about some of the assets that would be considered non-probate before I get into asset titling and beneficiary designation. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. So when we talk about other types of non-probate assets. Non-probate basically means assets that don't have to go through your will. Some of those assets that you can set up during your lifetime and retain control would be things like the 529 college savings accounts, living trusts. It seems like those go in and out of fashion. For years, it seemed everyone was setting up trust, and that was more around the very low federal exemption that existed. As the federal exemption stayed the same amount for many, many years and people's net worth grew and grew and grew, we saw the need, well, people felt the need for more and more trust to avoid probate and kind of controlling their assets and giving them options for federal estate tax planning. So we used to see a lot more trust, and we would see something called a credit shelter trust provision within those living trusts. So someone might have had a trust during their lifetime that says, hey, I can do whatever I want with it while I'm alive, but when I die, I want the trust to be broken up into something called a marital trust and a credit shelter trust, and that would help kind of manage some estate taxes. So as the estate exemption has gone up to what is now $5,430,000 per person, which gives a married couple quite a big federal exemption, we have kind of seen some of those trusts not being written the way they used to be. Occasionally, you'll still see them. Sometimes not as separate trust or part of living trust, but actually part of the will. So there will be provisions sometimes in a will that says, hey, if this is still impactful and we need to draw this card, this planning card out, here's the option to have these trust. All right. So it's a little complicated, and it's certainly something you need to talk to your attorney about if it would be applicable to you. But that is also different kinds of trust. So lots of different trusts, but just keep in mind there's trusts that are done outside of the will that are separate documents, but under the will are considered testamentary. That does not make those assets that go through your will non-probate. Okay, it's only non-probate if it's outside of the will. There's also things like charitable trusts, but that's, you know, another whole show as well. So we have found and talked about different ways that we can have assets that might be non-probate, such as 529 accounts and trusts. Let's talk about asset titling, because asset titling is another way to make assets that you own non-probate. And non-probate, again, just means you don't have to go through the will to get it. Some people think they're going to save a lot of money by having something non-probate. Probate fees in Pennsylvania are very low. They're not very high at all. Probate process is not that complicated. And some people, I think, get it confused thinking that non-probate means it's not going to be subject to inheritance taxes, which is wrong. So just because something is non-probate does not mean it's not subject to inheritance taxes in Pennsylvania. Remember, I mentioned the 529 accounts aren't subject to Pennsylvania inheritance tax, but that's because it's really considered a gift and has been made outside of your estate, even though you retained control of it. It's really considered a gift and out of your estate. That's why it's not basically included for inheritance tax purposes. So when we talk about asset titling and some of these other accounts, they still, even though they're non-probate, would be included for the most part for Pennsylvania inheritance tax purposes if you are still controlling it. It's again, something you want to have a conversation with about your attorney. But just the basic concept is if you can still control it and take the money out and use the money at any time, that's a good way to know if it's probably going to be included in your state for, you know, federal and inheritance tax purposes if you can still control it. So asset titling. What happens with asset titling? There's a number of different ways that accounts can be titled in joint names. We can have joint names with a spouse, and that's called joint by the entireties. So whatever I have owned joint with my spouse is going to go to them outright if I have it titled that way. Some spouses actually might have some of their accounts titled tenants in common. We used to see that again quite often when the estate exemption for federal purposes was so much lower, because we wanted to make sure that both spouses would have enough assets to use up all of their federal exemption. That federal exemption many, many years ago was $600,000 each. So as that has evolved into $5,430,000, there isn't quite the same need to make sure that assets are in both names separately to use that exemption, because all the rules have changed. There's something called portability now, and you know, if one spouse doesn't use their exemption, they can pass it to the other spouse. So a lot of rules have changed, but you might have clients who from, you know, 20 years ago did their estate planning, set it up with their attorney, never went and saw their attorney again, and never revisited their estate planning, and might still have accounts that are joint with tenants in common. Tenants in common means we each own our share separately. So that is not going to be a non-probate account. That would be a probate account because I own my share separately. So sometimes, here again, implications of, you know, doing things on your own, if you don't understand how all of these accounts and titling works, you might think you have a non-probate asset because you have joint ownership with someone. But if you set it up tenants in common, you own each of your shares separately and your share would be subject to probate. Okay. Joint with rights of survivorship, on the other hand, says that when I pass away, my share goes to my joint owner. It's rights of survivorship. If they survive me, that my share goes to them automatically. And they can go change it into their name alone with a death certificate. What you have to be careful quite often is, here is another implication. Sometimes parents will say, well, you know, Jimmy lives locally, so I'm going to make my bank account joint with Jimmy so that he can write checks on it and take care of my financial business. And let's say my bank account's $100,000 and I'm joint with Jimmy, but I know that Jimmy will share it with the other five kids when I die because he knows that's really my money. Well, legally, Jimmy is not required to share that with the other five siblings because you made it joint with rights of survivorship to Jimmy. So you've got to be careful when you're setting up accounts that you understand all the implications that could occur and consequences that could occur, that if Jimmy decides not to share it with the other five siblings, are you going to be okay with that? And if not, then maybe you need to change how you have it titled. We're going to continue our discussion about asset titling and beneficiary designations, kind of caution you on some of the implications and making sure that you have discussions with your professionals before you move forward on some of these things without proper professional advice. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-7000. 8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, call 610-694-8100, extension 6, or visit our website, wdiy.org.
Welcome back to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert. If you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air or off air, whatever is more convenient for you. We're talking about estate planning and, in particular, asset titling and beneficiary designations, making sure that you understand all the implications of what you're doing so that you don't get ahead of yourself and have unintended consequences. I like details. The devil's in the details. And if you don't understand the details, you might not understand what you're getting yourself into. And maybe you won't care after you're gone anyway, but maybe your surviving loved ones will care. You don't want them fighting necessarily. So you want to make sure you're doing the proper planning and, of course, seek the professional advice and meet with your attorney when you're doing any estate planning. So one of the things we've been talking about is when assets are considered non-probate, they're outside your will, they still may be subject to Pennsylvania inheritance tax purposes and New Jersey, for our New Jersey listeners out there, includable there as well. So just because something does not have to go through your will, through the executor, does not mean it's not subject to inheritance tax. We talked about asset titling, rights of survivorship by the entireties and tenants in common, and making sure that you understand the implications of asset titling. I had mentioned before the break about, you know, if you name an account joint with Jimmy and there's five other siblings and you die and everything goes to Jimmy, Jimmy is not necessarily required to share with the other five siblings. The other thing you need to understand is that asset titling changes may be considered gifting as well. So that if you have a $100,000 account and you put Jimmy's name on it, it's considered in essence a gift of $50,000 to Jimmy, because Jimmy could walk into the bank if he's joint owner and take the whole account out. If it's joint with rights of survivorship, he could empty the account. So you want to make sure that you understand the gift implications of doing such a thing as well, any joint titling. And just to throw this in particular, for people who put their children on real estate, there are pros and cons to that, and you just got to be really careful. If your children don't live here, they don't plan on living here, they'll never live in your house, it really is not such a great idea to put them on the house as joint owners. Generally, again, talk with your attorney about this, but in Pennsylvania, we have a 4.5% inheritance tax for assets that we own when we pass away. If we own a house in our name alone, it gets a step up in basis. And if our kids then in our estate have to sell it, it gets a step up in basis, and there's, you know, let's pretend it's sold for the same price at date of death. There's no gain or loss on that. Maybe some loss for some settlement charges and things like that. But if mom owns the house, it's $150,000, but she paid $10,000 for it 50 years ago, there's $140,000 gain. If mom sells it before she dies, she doesn't have a gain because she owns it, and there's rules around that. If you live in it and own it 2 out of 5 years, no, you don't have to recognize the gain if you're single and it's under $250,000. But if the beneficiary doesn't, if the child doesn't live in it and own it 2 out of the 5 years, and mom gifts it to them, they have received mom's basis of $10,000, and now mom dies, they own it, they sell it, they're going to have a very big gain. So you really want to think that through. Okay, I had a call come in from Joanne. She said, can you discuss Pennsylvania inheritance tax on safe deposit boxes and automobiles? Okay, thanks for calling in, Joanne. So what happens with, I believe what the question is, safe deposit boxes, there are sometimes valuables in a safe deposit box. So there is a requirement that a safe deposit box have an inventory done on it when someone dies. Now, if it's between spouses, a spouse, you know, a joint safe deposit, a spouse can just go in and, you know, take this, you know, do whatever. They don't have to do anything. But if mom had a safe deposit box and mom's the only owner on that, then there has to be an inventory. And yes, the items that are in the safe deposit box, if there are valuables, that inventory gets reported to the state, and you have to include those items on the inheritance tax return. And the inheritance tax is assessed at the rate of who's inheriting. So if it's mom's safe deposit box and mom had $100,000 of savings bonds in the box, you would inventory those savings bonds, value them at her date of death, and that value gets reported on the inheritance tax return. And if you are the daughter and you're the only beneficiary of the estate, well, Pennsylvania says anything passing to a child is taxed at 4.5%, then you would have 4.5% inheritance tax on the savings bonds. And the savings bonds, well, we would look at those and we would see how they were titled. And the savings bonds, if it's just mom's name alone, we would report the $100,000 and pay the 4.5% on the $100,000, in my example, going to daughter. If we looked at the savings bonds, they were worth $100,000, but the savings bond says mom or Joanne, they're joint. And then half would be included. But we would also look to make sure that the joint tenancy was made more than 1 year from date of death. So Pennsylvania brings back assets into the estate of the decedent if it was made joint within 1 year. So if, as long as it was more than 1 year and it was joint with mom or child, then only half gets included. So we would report the $100,000 and say half ownership and only half gets reported. If there were two kids' names on, mom or Joanne and Bob, then it would be one-third mom's. And that's the case like on a bank account or a brokerage account. If the or is more than one person, it gets divvied up based on mom's share of the ownership. Now, you also asked about automobiles. Automobiles, when it's to a spouse, Pennsylvania has rules that automobiles, you know, can transfer to a spouse without too much problem or difficulty. If the automobile is in mom's name, there's no surviving spouse, we would value the automobile again at fair market value on date of death, pay the inheritance tax based on whomever it's going to. So you have to be careful because it is fair market value. Sometimes what people will say is, well, there's the car, mom's car, she hardly ever drove it. It's worth $10,000, but we're going to sell it to, you know, the niece or the nephew for $4,000. Well, technically you have to file the inheritance tax return with the fair market value of $10,000. And then, whomever the assets would go to. So again, Joanne, thanks for the call. If it's between spouses, joint accounts between spouses do not have to be reported for inheritance tax purposes. And a safe deposit box does not have to be inventoried if it's with spouses. And an automobile passes to a spouse under special rules with Pennsylvania. So talk to your attorney about that if that's your situation. Much easier for spouses with a safe deposit box and automobiles, but same rules apply for just like on other assets for safe deposit and automobiles. If you had a bank account in your name alone, it all gets reported. Okay, I hope that answered your question. Folks, if you do have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. So asset titling, we've been talking about entireties, tenants in common, and with rights of survivorship, know the implications and understand them. Tenants in common is not non-probate. It is, in fact, probate. Beneficiary designations. Here's another way people try to get around probate. They will put on accounts, for example, on the savings bonds that we just discussed in my example with Joanne, you could have a savings bond that's payable on death. In that example, if you have $100,000 worth of savings bonds that are payable on death, that's non-probate, but it is 100% includable because I own them. It's only at my death that they become payable to someone else. So it's non-probate, but 100% includable in my estate for inheritance tax purposes, and I have $100,000 of savings bonds. Transfer on death, that could be a brokerage account. So I might have a brokerage account with stocks, bonds, mutual funds, that type of thing. I control that while I'm alive. If I put transfer on death, when I die, it will transfer to whomever I said. Transfer on death might be to three kids. It might be two kids, one kid. The relationship is what determines the tax rate for inheritance tax purposes, but that makes it non-probate. So while it doesn't have to go through my will, it still will be includable for inheritance tax purposes. You could have an individual named for beneficiary designations. You could have a trust named. You could have a charity named. If you don't know name anyone, there might be a default beneficiary. What am I talking about? For example, on retirement accounts, IRAs, Roth IRAs, 401ks, 403bs, annuity contracts, life insurance, anything that you could name a beneficiary on, you could name an individual, a trust, a charity, or if you, in light of you not naming anyone, it might be your estate, it might be your spouse, it might be your children, because you've got to find out what the custodian of that particular asset you have, do they have a predetermined default? Some people might think it's their estate. It might not be their estate. Some people might think it's their spouse. It might not be their spouse. It might be some default, which could be their estate. If I had a $500,000 IRA and I forgot to put a beneficiary down and I'm married, if it goes to my estate, then it accelerates the taxation of that IRA because estates don't have a life expectancy. If any of you know about why do we name individuals as beneficiaries on our retirement accounts, it's because our individuals, our living, breathing individuals, have a life expectancy. And the IRS says they have an age, and we aren't going to make them take out that taxable account any faster than their life expectancy. So if I have a $500,000 account and it's going to go to my spouse and my spouse has a 40-year life expectancy, he can take that $500,000 out over his life expectancy, over, what did I say, 40 years. If there is no spouse, or I forgot to name the spouse and there's an estate, even if I've named my husband as the beneficiary of my estate, the rules say it's not an individual and it's going to accelerate the taxation. You would really want to name an individual if that's the case, or a charity. A charity is zero tax, so that's always works very, very well when people are charitably inclined and they want to name they have charitable intent, then using an IRA as a beneficiary for the beneficiary designation works really well because there's no income taxation to a charity. So you want to make sure you understand beneficiary designations, whether it's payable on death, transfer on death, if you're naming individuals, if you're naming a trust. Lots of crazy rules around a trust. So you want to make sure that if you're going to use a trust as a beneficiary, that you really go over this with your attorney and make sure that the IRS rules will apply to finding a life expectancy for that person who's benefiting from that trust. And you want to make sure you understand default beneficiaries if you haven't properly named them. Make sure you also do contingent beneficiaries, folks. I can't say this enough. You name your primary, and then you name a contingent if something happens to both you and the primary. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We have our last break with 15 minutes left. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
You're tuned to WDIY Allentown, 88.1 FM and WDIY.org, serving the Lehigh Valley. This is Your Financial Choices with Lori Siebert. Lehigh Valley weather, it's my pleasure. Currently around 80 degrees. Tonight, a low around 57. Tomorrow, Thursday, sunny with a high near 83. Thursday night, a low around 60. For Friday, sunshine again with a high near 83. Friday night, a low of 61. Saturday, just a bit warmer, high of 87 with sunshine. And Saturday night, a low of 66. Lori, that's a pretty fair weather forecast. I'm very happy to give it.
Sounds very nice.
You don't have to shoot the messenger this time.
Very good. I'll take it. Thanks, John. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We're talking about estate planning and, in particular, asset titling and beneficiary designations. We had Albert call in off air, and Albert said that his in-laws have a house in Florida, and the house has a Lady Bird Johnson deed. Oh, I'm going to have to look that up because I don't know what that is, but I can probably guess. So, a Lady Bird Johnson deed. If they die, he will inherit. Oh, and he lives in Pennsylvania. So, his question is, where would the inheritance tax be due in which state? So, Albert, this is a great question because what happens sometimes, people get a little mixed up when they're inheriting. Sometimes they think they have to pay the inheritance tax. Well, it kind of depends on where the decedent resides. That is what's going to control if there is an inheritance tax at all. And the document will control who's going to be responsible for the inheritance tax. So let me talk about this in two pieces. In Florida, there is no inheritance tax. So that's one good thing. So Albert, if you do indeed inherit this house, there's no inheritance tax to you. There still could be a probate process, but depending on what that Lady Bird Johnson deed says, which is, thank you, Judy Ann, who just looked this up. These deeds are also called enhanced life estate deeds. With a standard life estate deed, you could name a beneficiary to inherit your property while you keep ownership of it for your lifetime. So there might be some restrictions to that, but what it sounds like is it would avoid probate because they've already identified who the beneficiary is. So that's similar to what we talked about. Thanks, Judy Ann. That's what we talked about where we said you can have a beneficiary designation. So that Lady Bird Johnson deed says, hey, it's ours during our lifetime, but if we die, it's going to go to the son-in-law. Son-in-law, the house is in Florida. There's no inheritance tax, so there's no inheritance tax due. There would, and I'm expecting, not be any probate process either if, in fact, that Lady Bird Johnson deed works the way it says, where there's a named beneficiary. You would probably just have to hire an attorney and go through retitling the deed in your name. So there would be no inheritance tax to you. So often people think because I've inherited that there would be a tax. But Albert, let's talk for a moment about what happens in Pennsylvania. Let's pretend the in-laws have a house in Pennsylvania. I don't know if these Lady Bird Johnson deeds even exist here in Pennsylvania, but let's pretend they do and you're the beneficiary here in Pennsylvania. What would happen then? Because in Pennsylvania, there's an inheritance tax return that has to be filed. And the responsibility of filing that return generally falls with the personal representative and or executor, as we would call them. And they file a return for what they are aware of or responsible for filing. And it could be either just the assets that are in the estate, or it could be even those assets that they are aware of that are not in the estate but are non-probate. For example, an IRA account that has a named beneficiary or a house that has a named beneficiary. So the personal representative may be responsible for that because guess what the will might say? The will in Pennsylvania might say, my will says that, you know, take care of my debts, my expenses, distribute my personal property to my kids, my spouse, whatever it is. And then the residue first goes to pay my inheritance taxes and then gets distributed to my children. So there will be wills typically that say that any taxes that are due from the estate are going to come out of my estate first, and only then does the residue pass to the beneficiary. So in your example, Albert, let's pretend you're getting a house in Pennsylvania and your sibling's going to get all the cash. Well, if the house is worth $100,000, the inheritance tax is 4.5%, and your sibling has a $100,000 bank account. So it sounds like mom and dad were even, $100,000 bank account for, you know, your brother, $100,000 house for you. But the will might say, oh, but pay the estate taxes for whatever assets are subject to estate taxes in my state, out of my estate. So your $100,000 account for your brother actually has to pay all the inheritance taxes first, which in this case would be like $9,000 if I figured that out right. $200,000. Yeah, $9,000. So he would have $100,000 less $9,000. He would only end up with $81,000 and you'd end up with a $100,000 house. I know I talk fast, you guys, but I talk fast because there's so much to talk about on this subject, and I love it so much because there's so many nuances and so many things to be careful of and watch for, which is, again, why you always need to talk with your attorney and other professionals. So I hope you understood that example, Albert, but you would be happy to know that there is no inheritance tax in Florida, and it all sounds good. Now, sometimes what people don't realize, though, is just because the inheritance tax has been taken care of, like in Pennsylvania, for example, or maybe in Florida, there's no inheritance tax. But maybe, Albert, your in-laws have a $200,000 IRA. So I just told you there's no inheritance tax. And the IRA names you maybe as the beneficiary, and you're going to get all excited because, you know, hey, it's a non-probate. There's no inheritance tax. I'm good to go. But everyone, be careful, because some assets retain their tax characteristics even after death. A $200,000 IRA, for example, would have had income tax on it to the owner of it, the participant of it, while they were alive. And just because they die, the tax consequences don't go away. That happens on certain assets, particularly retirement accounts and annuities. So you have to be careful that sometimes there is still income tax due on those certain kinds of assets. We call those income in respect of a decedent. When I mentioned the brokerage account earlier, if there was a transfer on death, the brokerage account transfer on death might still be subject to inheritance taxes, but there's a step up in basis on a transfer on death account, a brokerage account, stocks, mutual funds, outside of retirement accounts. I'm talking about something held in someone's individual name. There's a step up in basis to the date of death value. And then if you sell it the next day, there's probably no gains or losses on it. So that's something to keep in mind as well. I only have a few minutes left, and I just want to make sure that I also talk about the change in circumstance. You've got to be very, very careful and diligent if you have a change of circumstances in your family life. For example, a divorce or death. You've got to be very, very careful. If you have a divorce, you've divorced, you want to make sure that you change your beneficiary designations from that former spouse to whomever you want to name instead of them. This would apply to possibly life insurance accounts, life insurance at work, retirement accounts at work, IRAs, Roth IRAs, anything with a beneficiary designation. You want to go ahead and change. There are certain rules in Pennsylvania that help protect cases where there has been a divorce or a pending divorce. It may protect if there was a, you know, unforeseen death and I forgot to get my papers updated. Someone divorces their spouse, they die the next day and whoops, I didn't get over to the, you know, the account to update the beneficiary or take my ex spouse off. There are certain laws in Pennsylvania that help protect those circumstances, but not necessarily every kind of account. So you have to be really, really careful. If there's a 401k that's under ERISA, you've got to make sure you understand the rules. If you don't get your ex-spouse's name off of there, you don't want it going to that ex-spouse. And there may be situations where if you don't get it updated, it might happen. So you definitely want to watch out for changes in circumstances. The same thing happens if there's a death. If you were a happily married couple and, you know, one of the spouses dies and you don't update your beneficiary designations, quite often what I see when there's a husband and wife is I'll see them name each other as a primary beneficiary, and they never name a backup beneficiary, a contingent beneficiary. Well, if they don't go in and update their primary beneficiary designation and they pass away, remember, it could default to that. It could default to the beneficiary of the custodian, and the default might be the estate. So that's why it's great to have that contingent beneficiary designation in there, just in case you don't have time to get, you know, to the bank or the brokerage house or your financial advisor or your life insurance agent to get those things updated. So it's always good to have your backup beneficiary, your contingent beneficiary. And typically you can do that on retirement accounts, IRAs, Roth IRAs, life insurance, and annuities. Pensions is another thing I wanted to mention. You want to make sure that you do proper pension allocation. Sometimes when someone passes, they have a surviving pension. If that's going to a spouse, typically that's not going to be included for inheritance tax purposes. It's at zero. But if you have a pension that might be a term certain, so you might have, you know, oh, I'm going to take this pension option where I know I'm going to get this pension for 10 years certain, and I don't have a spouse, and I only live 2 years, there's some pension benefit left, that would be non-probate, still subject to inheritance tax purposes. So you want to make sure that you've kind of accounted for that when you're looking at your asset titling and assets and probate and non-probate, and who's going to pay the inheritance tax, and are there enough assets to pay the inheritance tax? Because one of the things I find, folks, is after people try to do all these machinations to avoid probate, they end up with no probate assets and no estate assets, and then they have a big inheritance tax to pay, and there's no money to pay it. And then you have to go to the beneficiaries to get that tax. And a lot of beneficiaries are surprised to find if there was nothing left in the estate, Pennsylvania can come back and take the inheritance tax from the asset that you received. So try not to be so, you know, quick and clever with your asset titling, doing things on your own. Make sure you're working with an attorney, a professional, that you have kind of followed all the threads for your asset titling, beneficiary designations, and making sure you're doing everything accordingly. Make sure you do your proper documents, get that will in place, just in case all that asset titling and beneficiary designation, if you didn't do enough and it ends up going to a default like the estate, that you have that will in place so that you at least get any remaining assets to the people that you like. And if you're charitably inclined, please make sure you're taking care of your your charities as well. Also, there's certain terms like per stirpes and per capita. I'm running out of time here, but you want to make sure you understand those if you have children and grandchildren, that it goes the proper place. All right, I think that we've covered as much as I can in the hour, and I've talked as fast as I could, and I know these are complicated things. I hope it wasn't too complicated at the pace I was talking, but it's to emphasize the complexity of this. And here I started the show by saying it's really the easiest thing you can do, but it's fun, let me tell you. So I want to thank the listeners who called in. I really appreciate it. Thanks to the listeners who didn't call in. Maybe you'll call in another time. Thank you, Judy M., for being here and taking the calls. Thank you, John, for being here in your pain as me. And next week, we are going to talk about understanding retirement options in Social Security, pensions, and retirement accounts. So it's kind of going to play off a couple little things I mentioned tonight. So talking about understanding retirement options and Social Security, pensions, and retirement accounts. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.